You're with Life Matters, and now more than ever, home and all that means is being brought home to us. The theme for Homelessness Week this year is Everybody Needs a Home. And while many of us are being asked to stay home, the world is a very different place if you don't have one. Children's author Maggie Hutchings calls attention to this very issue in her new book. Maggie's book is called I Saw Pete and Pete Saw Me. And it's a story that sees homelessness through the eyes of a young child. A dollar from every sale of the book is being donated to The Big Issue. And Maggie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
Tell us the story about Pete and what Pete saw.
Okay, so Pete is the young man that's experiencing homelessness, and he's the only character in the book with a name. So the young child doesn't actually have a name, none of the other characters do. And the child is walking along and sees Pete, who's experiencing homelessness, and makes an instant connection with Pete because he's drawing and he has a dog. And so he goes over and says hello. And, of course, nobody else is doing that. They're all busy. They're on their phones. They're rushing into the shops. You know, they're doing the things we all do. And it was something that I thought a lot about because my grandchildren are now getting to the age where they ask a million questions about everything. And I thought if I was walking along the street with one of my grandchildren, what would they be seeing? You know, they're at eye level with someone that's maybe
right.
In a doorway.
That's right. It struck me straight away that often people who are sleeping rough or are homeless are at a child's level because they're actually often sitting on the ground at eye level with a child.
Yes, exactly. And I think, you know, not only are they sitting there, but, you know, we do not want to see sometimes simply because it seems such a huge thing. There's a shame to even, you know, making eye contact perhaps with somebody that's homeless because you can feel quite helpless. And that's a human being. You know, you must treat everybody as a human being. And this is the reason for the story, really, is, you know, you might not be able to solve the problem. And the book doesn't solve the problem. It was important that, you know, we didn't end up with a nice, neat solution where Pete gets a house, because that would be a very unrealistic way to talk to a child about homelessness.
Maggie, I want to come back to that ending in a moment, actually, because I think that's really intriguing that you made that as a conscious choice. But before we move any further into the narrative of the book, because you've got grandchildren, I think you've got a five-year-old granddaughter, haven't you, Mila?
Yes, I have three, five and one, three little girls.
Great. Okay. So Mila, as being the eldest, of course, is the one most eligible to understand the book. When you read it to her, what did she say back to you?
At first, you know, well, I wrote the book because I wanted people to talk to their children about homelessness. Then, of course, I was thrown in the deep end as soon as I started talking to her, reading page one. She was already stopping me going, well, hang on a minute. What do you mean? Where does he live and why? But, you know, where does he sleep? And you know, so it was hard to even get into the story with her before. And I could see her processing, and it was almost like, you know, you have to remember with kids, everything is new. Every bit of information you give them is new. So, you know, it's so easy to think that everybody knows about homelessness. But it just threw her. Or, you know, she was just like, wow, that can happen. You know, I could just see her trying to sort of work out, well, why don't we just get him a house? And she basically said that, you know, can there be book two, she said at the end.
Well, isn't it interesting out of the mouths of children because, you know, why don't we just get these people a house? Because just to remind people in context here, Maggie, at the moment, of course, with Melbourne being the COVID-19 well, hotspot really of the nation, it's important to recognise that there's roughly 2,000 people most of the time living on the streets of Melbourne because they can't find anywhere to shelter. And the state government has just announced recently that they've extended their program of putting people on the streets in hotels for their own safety and for, you know, the wider community safety until next April. It's been extended, and that's $150 million worth of funding. But also they've been leasing 1,100 properties on the private rental market, and there's a great hope, I think, amongst Housing for the Homeless organisations that these rental market properties will be part of the move in a permanent way to house these people after COVID.
I mean, you know, to me, it just makes perfect sense. I mean, I don't think it's an unsolvable problem. I think, you know, it just hasn't been addressed. And, you know, there's nothing like a crisis to make people address things. I mean, you know, the same goes for our health system, I guess, that we can have more intensive care beds when we're in a crisis. Have shelter for homeless people. I heard also that student accommodation, which is empty, is being used for homeless people as well at the moment. So,
I think it has reignited yet again. It's sad that it has to be yet again, but the idea that if we're going to try and create employment on some kind of capital works, major infrastructure methodology, then surely social housing and the enormous deficiencies across the nation in social housing has to be part of that.
I would really hope so. I mean, you know, to me, this is a golden opportunity. And, you know, I was a counsellor for 20 years. And so, I worked also with people that, mainly with families and children. But, you know, there's so many people in insecure rental accommodation that were on the edge of homelessness all the time. And, you know, part of their anxiety and part of the management of their mental health was just if they could have known that they could have a rental property for a long period of time and stay there and establish themselves rather than having to move around or maybe think, well, I won't get another place, particularly if they have a dog or they're a single parent or an elderly person. You know, this would help in so many ways. I mean, it would save an awful lot of, you know, stress for those people. But also, I think, you know, the burden on the health system. I found that as soon as somebody had somewhere permanent to live and felt secure, they didn't need to have their visits for their anxiety quite as often because their anxiety was tied to feeling safe.
Yes, and a sense of place.
And going to your local shop rather than having to establish that all again and, you know, saying hello to the same people every day. So there's a lot of
threads running through the book is, by the way, if you just joined us, my guest is Maggie Hutchings. She's the author of a new children's book which addresses in a quite honest and frank way, the issue of homelessness through a child's eyes. It's called I Saw Pete and Pete Saw Me. Pete is the person who's living on the streets and the child is someone who's walking past holding his mother's hand, and that child's noticing of Pete brings in his mother, and also we discover a whole range of other support people in the local community who do try and help Pete momentarily with blankets or food or kind words or someone to talk to. And as I was reading through the book there, Maggie, I was thinking about your family's ancestry. Tell us about the great-great-grandmother of your life.
Yes, so Martha was my great-great-grandma. And like most people, I hadn't looked into my history until ancestry became this big thing and everybody got online and started looking. And I found to my great surprise that Martha died in 1870. She was only 23 after giving birth to my great-grandfather, George. And at the time, she was in what would now be equivalent to a homeless shelter. She was in the workhouse, which was quite a dreadful place, actually, the Chelsea workhouse. It's an awful place. And she'd become homeless from what I can work out. She was pregnant and obviously having to keep that secret. She was a servant in a house. And then the smallpox epidemic hit London, and she, in that household, the two children of the household did die. And so her job was gone. And, of course, by that time she must have looked pregnant by then. And so I don't know, you know, obviously we'll never know quite how she ended up without a home. But if you were a servant, that was your home. And if you lost your job, you were gone. And in the 1870s, that was a massive problem in London. People didn't want, you know, the extra burden of another person in the household who might get infected, and you were out, you were on the street. And so unfortunately, yeah, she gave birth and then died 5 weeks later, leaving my great-grandfather George in the workhouse by himself at 5 weeks old. So, yeah, it's I think if people look back, they might find that homelessness is probably right there in their family history. It wouldn't be many generations back to find people in insecure housing or perhaps, you know, in a state where they were going in and out of workhouses, which was quite a common thing to do as well.
Well, of course, we're also talking about this now in light of the recently just passed National Homeless Week. And you know, the theme for this year is everybody needs a home. It should be the theme for every year, let's face it. And at the moment, I think the rough figures are about 120,000 Australians are sleeping rough or finding it hard to even secure any form of consistent accommodation. I'm just wondering, Maggie, too, as I read the book, and you've mentioned your five-year-old granddaughter Milo sort of asking questions from the first page. Is the book aimed at that age group? Because it is, even to an adult's eye, quite confronting.
Well, I think you'll find, though, that children are much less confronted by these things than we are, because we've got the big picture. We really understand what it means. When you read the book to a child, if you were to wipe out all your knowledge of what homelessness is, you wouldn't find it so confronting because, you know, kids really don't understand what that means. You know, you have to explain it to them, so you unfold that in an age-appropriate way, depending on what age the child is. But I want also the adults who are reading that book to start thinking, you know, it's really easy to hide the horrors of the world from children. And, of course, we want to keep them safe and we want to keep them feeling secure. But eventually, these kind of things, you know, need to be addressed. And we have to talk about poverty. We have to talk about homelessness. We have to talk about, you know, all of these big, big things. And I think a picture book's a perfect, you know, entry point in a way, because you can make it age appropriate. You can tailor that conversation. But yes, the adults find it very confronting. You know, I've had a lot of adults say they cried, you know, when they read it and had to sort of get themselves together so they could read it to their child without crying. But children look at this very differently. They're interested. They're not terrified by it like we are. They're just really interested. They need the explanation.
Well, as you mentioned at the front of this conversation, Maggie, you didn't want to sew it all up in a neat sort of bow at the end and say everyone gets a happy ending, because, as you say, that isn't what's going on the streets of all our cities and some of our regional cities and towns as well. But I'm just wondering, have you had any responses from children who have been upset by the sort of, what's the word, kind of open ending, that we don't actually know what happens to Pete?
Well, I think, you know, it's a surprise to children to have a picture book that doesn't have a neat ending in the first place. So regardless of the content. So, yes, I mean, I suppose, you know, I haven't heard from anybody saying that. I mean, it's early days in terms of feedback. But I think, again, you know, for parents reading it, they're going to have to prepare that, you know, and talk about that ending. And so, you know, there's many endings that you could have in that situation. I mean, the fact that Pete gives a sign, I don't want to give the ending away, but, you know, he does, obviously he's still okay and he's responding to the child by, you know, leaving him kind of a little secret message to say, yes, he's okay. But, you know, the truth is that people that are homeless don't get to stay in the same place even. They don't. They get moved on. Things change. Buildings get renovated. You know, the doorway you were sleeping in last week, well, maybe someone's blocked it up this week, you know, because they don't want you there. And that's a reality. So, you know, it would be lovely if you think that somebody would, you know, be in a community and be able to stay there and have that longevity. But it's just not possible. This is why we need homes, you know, and home being not just four walls, but a safe, pleasant environment suitable for each individual, because individuals are all different. Everyone needs something different from a home.
Indeed so. Maggie, you're absolutely right. And look, thank you so much. I've really enjoyed this conversation and all the best with the book.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Maggie Hutching, she's a writer, artist and counsellor. Her book, illustrated by Evie Barrow, beautifully illustrated, by the way, is called I Saw Pete and Pete Saw Me, and a dollar of every sale of the book is being donated to The Big Issue.